And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Over the last several years, the connection between racial equity and climate justice has become more clear-cut. There is a very strong case to be made that environmental justice concerns have a lot to do with race, that infrastructure, plants, you know, refineries, pipelines, lots of bad stuff tends to end up in neighborhoods that are the least advantaged, the least politically powerful, and those then the people in those neighborhoods tend to suffer the most environmental hazards. This has all come to a head with COVID. The health impact of bad air on COVID have shown up remarkably along racial disparity lines. I mean, so there's a connection between climate issues, climate justice, and racial justice. And all of this is kind of brought to the head recently by the what can only be described as horrific events ongoing as we record this in mid-April in north of Minneapolis, where yet another young man has been shot by the police. It stutters the heart to try and figure out what to think about this and how to take action. But I think it's appropriate to discuss in a climate context because of the long history that combines systematic racism with systematic energy infrastructure and domination of some parts of the world. I mean, that's a sort of not very clarifying kind of discussion, but I hope it's a preamble to a discussion we can have with Representative Jeff Roy, who's a representative in the Massachusetts State Legislature from the 10th Norfolk District. He's also chairman of the Telecommunications, Utilities, and Energy Bill, but he's also a guy who knows a lot about these issues and is someone to look to for advice. So welcome, Jeff.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's good to be here.
Jeff, these are very somber issues, and I know that they come home to roost in Massachusetts in many ways as well. Tell me, you've been watching TV. I mean, what's your feeling about can begin with kind of the role of policing. And here in Massachusetts, I know there's recently been a bill to try to improve the circumstances here in the state. What's your take on all the kind of stuff that's going on? What do you think? What should people think?
Well, you know, I think it's been a long time in coming. And the fact that people are now able to have real serious conversations about issues like systemic racism and beginning to see how the disparities over time have unfolded and led to a lot of inequities out there is key. I've just looked back and think of the past year as eye-opening for me, who may not have really understood what folks were going through. And, you know, the conversations have enabled me to learn a great deal over the past year. I'm not saying I was totally blind to this before the last year, but witnessing some of the real tragic events that have taken place really, really opened up some very sour wounds and caused me to engage in some really profound discussions. And one of them has led to actually radio show that I do with Natalia Linos and Dr. Michael Walker Jones. We do it on Franklin Public Radio, and it's called Toward a More Perfect Union. And we engage in discussions about what's going on around us and how we can achieve that more perfect union, which our Constitution and our original founding documents aim towards.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that I talk about, you know, frequently on the show is that, you know, when America was founded back in 1787, and they were putting the founding documents together and setting up a set of ideals that we would aspire to, they recognized that early on that striving towards perfection was always going to be the goal. And if you look at the National Seal, for example, the National Seal has a pyramid on it. And the seal has 13 steps representing the original 13 colonies. But it never reaches that point. It's a pyramid that's an unfinished pyramid. And I think that was the most profound statement, that it was the object of people coming in generations later on to keep adding to those steps to try to form a more perfect union. And, you know, we're not perfect. I mean, you know, my favorite of the Federalist Papers, written, the James Madison one, I can't remember the number of it, but it said if men were angels, there would be no need for government. And we know that we're all human, we're all fallible, we're certainly not angels. But government is those things that we choose to do together, and we can always grow and enhance what we do together. And I really think that came to the forefront in 2020 and into 2021.
And the recognition that we all need to, there's lots of work remaining to be done, right?
Yeah.
Towards the, I mean, do you have any sense of what has Massachusetts, so there is, and I would not presume to say what the goal, what we need to do. I don't have that experience, but where do you think we're going? What have we done in terms of mending some of these injustices? I mean, for example, in the recent climate bill, there is an environmental justice provision which codifies some kind of protection for neighborhoods that are not as politically powerful. What kinds of stuff have we done, should we be doing, to make Massachusetts a state that we can all be proud of?
Well, I'll point to the police reform legislation that we did in the last session. And it was signed by the governor. It was either December 30th or December 31, just towards the end of 2020. You know, after the death of George Floyd, which, you know, remarkably, that the trial is taking place as we have this conversation. But, you know, that event certainly triggered the beginning of some conversations and the genesis of the conversations about reforming policing in Massachusetts. And, you know, at the beginning, we heard a lot of resistance about, why are you taking events that occurred 1,000 miles away and trying to address that in Massachusetts, which does not have a problem with policing? And, you know, I looked at that question and could see quite quickly that that simply wasn't true. I mean, I will say, I know many police officers here in Franklin, and the other community that I represent is Medway. I know them. I know the quality of those departments. I know the quality of the training that they have. And I didn't see these issues in the Franklin and Medway police departments. However, if you look at Springfield, for example, the Springfield Police Department was investigated by the Donald Trump Justice Department. William Barr issued a report in July of 2020, which indicated that there was a lot of bad behavior going on in the Springfield Police Department, and it was ranked one of the worst in the nation. And when I would hear people say, what are you doing on police reform in Massachusetts? There's nothing wrong in our communities. I said, you know, there may be nothing wrong in Franklin, in Medway, and I think they have great police forces. But I happen to believe that the people of Springfield deserve the same quality of policing that we have here in Franklin and Medway in their communities. And that should be the same case among all 351 communities. And so we embarked on a journey over the course of 6 to 7 months in 2020 of looking at policing. And many of the reforms that we did end up doing in that bill were things that police departments and police chiefs had wanted for over a decade. They wanted a police certification system where we would license police officers. Did you know that of the 50 states, only 4 did not have police certification systems, and Massachusetts was one of them? So we brought in a police certification program where there would be uniform training standards. And, you know, that was an important component of it. The bill also contained somewhere between 10 and 15 commissions that were established to look at a number of issues involving systemic racism in policing activities. They're going to report back to us with some more recommendations about other things that we can do to improve the state of not only policing in Massachusetts, but race relations in general. And those are important conversations that await. Those commissions are just starting. They're getting underway. And I'll tell you, probably one of the most controversial pieces of the legislation had to do with the concept of qualified immunity. There were calls for the elimination of qualified immunity. And what is qualified immunity? That is, if a police officer was conducting his or her business, and there was no prohibition or rule out there that would call into question their behavior, then they would get an immunity under the law. You couldn't sue them unless they had violated a known statute or rule or case law object. And, you know, not every piece of conduct is put into case law or rule or statute. So it's, you know, it's a tough road to hoe. Mm-hmm. But it's been the state of the law for 50 years. And, you know, some folks were ready to eliminate the whole concept of qualified immunity. But others, and myself was included in that list, said, I'm not ready to overturn 50 years of established law without taking a good hard look at it. And so I had filed an amendment to the police reform bill that called for the establishment of a commission to study qualified immunity and make recommendations to us as to what, if any, changes should be made. And you also have to keep in mind that if we eliminated qualified immunity under state law, that would have absolutely no impact to the qualified immunity that's available under federal law. We can only dictate what happens in the state courts. We can't dictate what happens in the federal courts. So that's another piece that had to be taken into consideration. And, you know, that was an immense topic of conversation. Sure. Some people thought we were weak by not eliminating qualified immunity. But I really think a lot more thought had to go into that concept before we jumped too soon.
When do you think that commission would come back? Was it for 18 months or so from the beginning of?
No, we gave it a short window. I can't recall the date, but it's in 2021. They're gonna make their recommendations. If not by the fall, somewhere around that time.
Interesting. So we should expect more discussion about these important issues during in this
Without
calendar
question.
Year.
Oh, good. Without question.
Good. Well, Jeff, thank you for taking the time to talk about these very, very important issues. I really do appreciate your candor. What we'll do is put up some links to what we talked about at the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have questions, you can send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. You can listen to us on your smartphone using any of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please rank us. Please ask your friends to listen to us. I want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. And I want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Jeff, thank you so much for taking the time to talk.
Hey, thank you for having me, and you have a great night.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.